We concentrate our attention onto the text of the exam assigned on November 2018, the 15th. This exam concerns the well-famous system for the defense of the city of Venice from the high tides that characterize the local sea, the Mose. The Mose consists of a row of mobile gates at the three inlets, which temporarily separate the lagoon from the sea in the event of a high tide. There will be a total of 78 gates divided into four barriers. At the Lido Inlet, the widest, there will be two rows of gates of 21 and 20 elements, respectively, linked by an artificial island, the island connecting the two rows of the gates at the center of the Lido Inlet will also accommodate the technical buildings housing the system operating plant. One row of 19 gates at the Malamocco Inlet and one row of 18 gates at the Chioggia Inlet. The gates consist of metal box-type structures 20 meters wide for all rows, with a length varying between 18.5 and 29 meters, and from 3.6 to 5 meters thick, connected to the concrete housing structures with hinges, the technological heart of the system which constrain the gates to the housing structures and allow them to move. Under normal tidal conditions, the gates are full of water and rest in their housing structures. When a high tide is forecast, compressed air is introduced into the gates to empty them of water, causing them to rotate around the axis of the hinges and rise up until they emerge above the water to stop the tide from entering the lagoon. When the tide drops, the gates are filled with water again and return to their housing. The inlets are closed for an average of between 4 and 5 hours, including the time taken for the gates to be raised, about 30 minutes, and lowered, about 15 minutes. To guarantee navigation and avoid interruption of activities in the port of Venice, when the mobile barriers are in operation, a main lock is under construction at the Malamocco Inlet to allow the transit of large ships, while at the Lido and Chioggia Inlets there will be smaller locks to allow emergency vessels, fishing boats, and pleasure craft to shelter and transit. Operating procedures dictate that the gate will be raised for tides of more than 110 centimeters high. The competent authorities have established this as the optimum height with respect to current sea levels, but the gates can be operated for any level of tide. The Mose system is also flexible, and depending on the winds, atmospheric pressure, and level of tide, it can oppose the high water in different ways, with the simultaneous closure of all three inlets in the case of exceptional tides, by closing just one inlet at a time, or by partially closing each inlet, given that the gates are independent for medium-high tides. The filling of the gates and the consequent inclination are regulated through an helicoidal pump driven by a direct motor. The motor is controlled by a microprocessor that calculates the level of the tide through a flow meter. Therefore, draw the block scheme of the acquisition regulation chain identifying the input and output variables in every block, and in particular the process variables. Calculate the transfer function of the process, highlighting what variables must be known. Plot the Bode diagram of the loop function, process plus actuator, discussing the eventual problems in terms of stability, instability. Show the numerical implementation of the regulator if it is necessary. Design a circuit that allows to measure the process variable with a plus minus 1.3% precision. And briefly, answer the following questions. Connect a bidirectional transducer to a synchronous rectifier with a diode bridge and motivate the design choices. What is the shape of the sync function and why is it not typically used to reconstruct the original signal? How is the characteristic voltage-current relationship in the unijunction transistor and why it has that shape? What defines the sensibility of an absolute encoder? This is the text of the exam. So now let's try to identify the characteristics of the process that must be controlled. The first consideration is related, as usual, to the identification of the process variable, the manipulated variable, and the control variable. The process variable is clearly identified by the text, since it says that the system, the MOSES system, receives an information that concerns the level of the C, let's call it H, due to the more or less important tide foreseen, forecast. About the control variable, it is clear that we have to exert a certain level of force to push the air into the gates so as to throw out the present water and to cause the inclination of the gate itself that will stop the tide. Therefore, it is quite intuitive to imagine that the control of the motor that will inflate the air into the gates, considering the possible presence of frictions, considering that the motor is into a humid environment, and maybe its activity is stopped for many weeks, but suddenly it has to work. All these considerations suggest to control it in current so as to develop a suitable torque that will drive the process. Concerning the actuator, and therefore just to establish what is the manipulated variable, we observe that basically it consists on the pump, the helicoidal pump, plus a direct current motor. In the picture of the file that contains the solution of the exam, you see a small drawing that shows the motor, the pump connected to the shaft of the motor, rotating with the angular velocity omega of the motor itself. The fluid that crosses the pump exits on the other side, and it is possible to regulate the output pressure or the output flow rate depending on the particular model that we want to implement. In the picture, also the length of the pump is highlighted just to take into account that the longer the pump, the greater the possibility of losses of energy in the pump itself. Therefore, to keep constant the pressure or the output flow rate, it is necessary to provide more energy from the point of view of the motor, that is, considering the model that we have developed of the motor, more torque. And let's come to the expression of the torque developed by the motor. We can apply to this situation, to this process, the same model that we used for the motor itself, that is, let's consider the friction internal to the motor. Let's consider the inertia that characterizes the motor itself. This is intuitive, this is reasonable, because the motor works in unfavorable conditions. Therefore, we must foresee a certain level of friction due to the contact of suitable internal mechanisms that becomes more difficult with the time due to the particular environmental conditions. Let's consider the inertia. We have to move very big devices, very big bodies, mechanical bodies. Therefore, even the motor will be not small, not trivial in terms of weight and geometrical characteristics. So to start its movement will be required a high level of energy and of torque as a consequence. But we have also to define the effective torque, that is that part of the work of the motor that is not devoted to the motor itself, but is devoted to the management of the process that we are considering. And we said, basically, due to the text, that the motor must inflate a certain amount of air in the gates, and for doing this must cause a proper rotation of the helicoidal body internal to the pump. Therefore, we can consider that the effective torque developed by the motor itself must move the mass of the air. Let's neglect, for example, the weight of the helicoidal part of the pump. Otherwise, we can include in the mass of the general object that the motor must move. I repeat, the effective torque is given by a mass, maybe including the helicoidal pump or not, time an acceleration, time a distance. This is quite a theoretical definition, because it corresponds to the product of a force time a distance, time arm. In this case, the force is given by mass time acceleration. The mass, already said, the mass of the air, eventually we add the mass of the helicoidal body of the pump, time the acceleration. If we consider the air, we are talking about the acceleration of the air inside the pump, but it is clear that the acceleration, the linear acceleration of the air inside the pump, is directly related to the rotational acceleration of the pump itself, therefore of the motor. So we can write omega of the motor, of course, prime, with prime we mean the derivative function, time, the distance, that is the application point with respect the maximum distance of the body that must be moved with such a kind of mechanical action. And this distance is the radius from the axis of the helicoid of the pump itself. Okay, so after this consideration, the general expression of the torque is the product of the mass of the air times the radius times the acceleration of the motor plus the friction of the motor times the angular velocity plus the inertia of the motor times the acceleration of the motor itself. And after few steps, we obtain the relationship between the angular velocity of the motor divided by the torque, that is 1 on friction of the motor plus S, the frequency, we are in the Laplace domain, time the sum of the mass of the air multiplied by the radius plus the inertia of the motor. That is a typical low-pass transfer function in frequency. However, now we have only expressed the mechanical relationship internal to the system composed by the motor and the pump. But we have to transform this into a suitable flow rate, and we have also to express some considerations that will allow us to relate this mechanical action to the inclination that the gate will assume, and therefore to the opposition that the Moses system will exert with respect the height of the tide. First of all, we have to decide if with the helicoidal pump we control the output pressure or the output flow rate. A first consideration suggests us that the mechanical moment applied by the pump to the fluid that must be inflated into the gates turns out to be proportional to the force with which the fluid will exit from the pump itself. And therefore, we can suppose that this mechanical action is proportional to the pressure with which the fluid exit from the pump. On the contrary, if we consider the flow rate, we know that the flow rate is typically given by the product of the velocity of the fluid times the section of the tube into which it is passing. Therefore, since the mechanical action is proportional to a force, and the force is an acceleration, and the acceleration is the derivative function of the velocity, we can conclude that the relationship between the mechanical moment exerted and the output flow rate will be characterized by the presence of a Laplace expression of the derivative function, that is a constant time the frequency Ks. On the other hand, the flow rate is probably more interesting for our modeling, since it is able to put the general expression in relationship with the volume. And the volume of the air causes a pressure variation between the internal gate and the external environment to the gate that allows to the gate itself to start its inclination up to a certain angular position theta that is considered correct to oppose the system to the action of the tide. Therefore, the flow rate can be chosen as, let's say, final manipulated variable, and we can try to put it into the relation with the inclination theta of the gate that must be used against the tide itself. In the lower part of the first page of the solution, there is a small picture that helps to understand the pipeline, let's say, that controls the process. You see the microprocessor that receives from a suitable transducer the level of the tide located at a certain distance, just to have the time to prepare the inclination of the gates in a suitable way. The microprocessor drives the motor. The motor is connected to the pump, and the pump inflates the air inside the gate so as to provoke the right inclination. The association between the right angle corresponding to the level of the tide that has been detected by the transducer is assumed to be stored inside the microprocessor in a suitable lookup table. So in this case we don't have to think or to conceive a particular relationship between these two magnitudes, because we suppose that this problem has been already studied and solved. Therefore, the manipulated variable can be described as a list of possible variables that are chained, that are connecting together because they influence reciprocally each other. They are the torque of the motor, the angular velocity of the motor, the flow rate, the volume, and the angular inclination. Therefore, the gain of the control loop can be described as usual as the process variable divided by the manipulated variable, times the manipulated variable divided by the control variable. But in this case, we have six ratios that are the ratio between the height, the level of the tide, divided by the inclination. The inclination divided by the volume divided by the flow rate related to the angular rotation velocity, this last one divided by the torque, and the torque related to the current as a control variable. We can replace each one of these ratio with its own mathematical representation. The first is a constant because we assume that the relationship between the level and the inclination is mapped into a suitable lookup table. The second relationship is ky divided by s square. This is due to the fact that the volume basically represents the amount of the air that is inflated into the gate, and this amount causes a variation in the pressure. It is better to say that causes a variation in the difference of pressure between the internal pressure of the gate and the external one. A pressure, you mean, is a force, and the force is equal to the product of the mass times the acceleration related to the particular movement that is occurring. In this case, the force due to the variation of the pressure causes a rotation of the gate around its blocked axis, and therefore can be considered proportional to the second derivative function of the inclination. This brings to that equation k1 divided by s squared, since in the Laplace domain the second derivative highlights a s squared term. The third ratio is k2 divided by s, since the volume of the air is the integral function of the flow rate. K3 expresses the constant, the proportional relationship between the flow rate and the angular velocity of the helicoidal pump. And finally, we have the relationship between the velocity and the torque that we have already identified. Basically, it is a low-pass expression. And K5 is the ratio between the obtained torque and the current supplied to the actuator itself. It is a very complex expression, but it is not complete, because we have to include a delay, as we briefly mentioned before, due to the transmission of the process variable to the microprocessor. Consider that the transducer is a flow meter, and the flow meter providing a flow rate must be put in relationship with the level of the tide age. This level is proportional to the volume of water that can be filled into a predefined surface. Therefore, the environmental area for the measurement can be put at a certain distance from the Mohs system, defining a volumetric cube into which the surface and the geometrical magnitudes are fixed, crossed by the water that goes at a certain flow rate. Therefore, this volume is given by the product of the level time the basis area, and this is the integral of the flow rate. This would require the inclusion into this expression of another 1 on S term. But just to avoid further complications, let's consider this calculation in the lookup table that associates the level with the necessary rotation. Instead of doing this, we could define a table that associates the flow rate detected by the transducer with the necessary inclination that the Mohs system must assume. Looking at the present expression, that, as we have seen, is approximated because we have made a hypothesis and we neglected some issues, we have still three poles into the origin and one pole due to the motor characteristics that is located in a frequency equal to the ratio between the inertia of the motor divided by the radius of the pump time the mass of the air inflated, plus, as we have said, a delay. We know that we can apply a dynamic compensation, therefore we multiply the transfer function by an equation made by three zeros and three poles, 1 plus SZ1, 1 plus SZ2, 1 plus SZ3 divided by 1 plus SP1, 1 plus SP2, 1 plus SP3, with the idea that the two first zeros will eliminate the effect of two of the poles into the origin. The third one could be coincident with the pole given by the motor, and this will allow us to cross the 0 dB axis with a slope that is equal to minus 1, minus 20 dB per decade, that makes the system perfectly stable. This is a solution, of course. It is not necessary that Z3 corresponds to the pole of the motor. For example, we can put another different zero, and let's say the result is the same. The numerical implementation is quite straightforward, because we can build a sequence with three blocks. Each one is a zero pole function we know how to implement it because we have seen this procedure in the lesson, and we have repeated it in some of the previous exercises that we have seen. And simply the procedure is repeated three times. Just a remark about the possibility of using the cascade control, because in this case the real actuating system, that is the pump plus the motor, features only one pole, so there is no possibility of applying an internal control chain like in other cases that we have seen, because the situation related to the actuator system is not unstable, so the possible controller that we could conceive simply would compensate that pole of the motor, therefore it would make the same activity, the same action as the general one that we have just now described. So it is useless to conceptually conceive another controller separated from the first one. About the possible delay, we know that it can be compensated with a Smith predictor. We know that we must express the function implementing the prediction as 1 minus the exponential term power the delay considered divided by the poles that we are considering, that is S square, S and the pole of the motor. Therefore, even that control will be quite complex operation from the numerical point of view, but what it is specific, peculiar, is the implementation of the delay term that can be done as a set of memory consecutive cells that are crossed by the input value that comes from the loop control chain, and is delayed the time that corresponds to the product of a suitable clock by the number of the cells that are considered. In this case, however, the other solution is preferable because since we detect the level of the tide at a certain distance of from the control system, from the MOSES system, that can be 1 or 2 kilometers, just to give the MOSES system the time to raise up the gates, the transmission time will be certainly short, but probably not real time. I mean, not trivial. For example, 300 milliseconds, 500 milliseconds, that is quite a short time, but in any case could be eliminated with a Smith predictor, however, without the cell memory system, because probably it could envision the usage of a lot of cells, and this is not the case. Instead, we can implement it as a cascade of low-pass filters, numerically implemented, of course, and we have already seen such a kind of implementation, so we assume that is completely known to us. And that's all for what concerns the control of the system. Now, let's come to the part that is devoted to the measurement of the process variable. As we have previously said, the real process variable should be the height, the level of the tide. Just to avoid, however, a further complication in the model, we assumed that the measurement is done through a flow meter. And the integration necessary to identify the level from the measurement of the flow rate is, let's say, skipped and assumed to be included into the lookup table into the microprocessor that provides the right inclination of the gates. Consider that this is a problem specific due to the choice of using a flow meter as a transducer for the measurement. If, for example, we would have used a level meter based, for example, on an ultrasound system located into the bottom of the sea, the measurement would be very quite straightforward. Okay, maybe the electronic approach could be a little bit problematic, but we wouldn't have been the need for skipping the integral function evaluation by means of the lookup table as mentioned before. In any case, let's consider the possible flow meters that we know from the theory, and let's try to choose one of them. The first is, as you know, the ultrasound flow meter based on a suitable chamber into which the fluid under examination is forced to pass. We have a ultrasound generator and a ultrasound receiver. The generator plays also the role of a receiver and vice versa. So we have two generations of ultrasounds, and we measure the time needed for the ultrasound beam to go from the first transmitter to the first receiver and from the second transmitter to the second receiver. We calculated the difference between these two times, and we know that this difference is proportional more or less to the level of to the distance that is made by the ultrasound beam, and is proportional in particular to the velocity of the ultrasound and of the fluid with which the ultrasound travels. This is a good solution, however, it is quite difficult to be carried out, and in particular it is not trivial to perform the generation of the ultrasound beam. Another transducer that we have seen is the so-called Venturi tube. Very okay. But if you remember, the relationship between the output voltage that we can measure and the flow rate is not linear. Another possible solution is the electromagnetic flow meter that is okay, very precise and accurate, but very complex because we have to generate a magnetic field into a problematic environment like the sea. So consider also what happens in winter instead in summer. Consider that we can have hurricanes. So this is not probably the best choice. Probably the best choice is the simplest one, that is a turbine. That is not so precise. Sometimes can be considered invasive with respect to the particular tube, the particular environment that we are considering, but not in this case, into which the area is very large. Therefore, it is okay, and we know that the flow rate measurement is transformed, in this case, into a rotational velocity measurement that can be performed very easily by an incremental encoder. Therefore, in the answer, after motivating the decisions that suggest the particular type of transducer to be employed, we can describe the basic principles on which the incremental encoder, this kind of transducer, consists on. About the required precision, since we have the encoder, we know that no conversion is necessary because the incremental encoder exits with a couple of digital signals, digital channels that are sent directly to the port of the microprocessor. Therefore, the precision required influences not the number of the bits of a possible converter, but the number of the windows that are required into the incremental encoder to assure the required accuracy. In this case, the percentage of the error that is tolerated is plus minus 1.3%. That is, the tolerance is twice this value, so we have to divide 100 by 2.6. This gives 38.5, that is, we need 39 windows per crown to satisfy this particular request. And now let's come to the specific questions to which a brief answer is asked. The first is related to the connection between a differential transducer, a bidirectional transducer to be precise, with the text, and the correspondent rectifier made by a diode bridge. In the third page of the solution, a possible situation corresponding to this request is shown, into which we take as bidirectional transducer the linear differential one. It is made by a rod, a magnetized rod, that can be moved upwards or downwards so as to be completely coupled with the upper of the secondary circuits or the lower one, and will provide an output voltage signal that could be in phase or in counter phase with respect to the power supply. So this kind of transducer must be connected with the rectifier that is shown in the right part of the picture. And what is important is the locations of the output signal of the transducer and of the power supply voltage provided to the circuit, because the comparison between these two signals and in particular the decision about if they are in phase or not is clearly related to a correct connection of these signals between the transducer and the diode bridge. And you see that this circuit is made first of all by a magnetic coupling circuit with two solenoidal circuits. The second one features the central coil connected to the ground. The first one is connected to the power supply, the same power supply of the primary solenoidal circuit in the transducer. Then the secondary solenoidal circuit in the bridge is connected to that square circuit, into which every side features the presence of a diode. The north and the south point of this network, of this mesh, are connected to the extremities of the secondary solenoidal circuit, while the east and west points of this circuit are connected to another solenoidal circuit that is coupled with the output voltage of the transducer. And the output of the bridge, of the conditioning network, is taken in the middle contact point of this solenoidal circuit and is sent to the low-pass filter for flattening of the signal. The second question is related to the significance of the sync function. and why it is not particularly often used when we have to reconstruct the original signal from a set of samples taken on it. We know that the sync function is given by the ratio of a sine function of omega by the time divided by omega multiplied by the time. That is, first of all, it features the presence of the sine function that must be implemented and calculated. Second, it features the presence of a ratio that will probably provide a floating point result. In many embedded microprocessors, like those typically used in industrial applications, just to keep the consumption low, the frequency low, and even the size of the device small, many general purpose characteristics typical of other microprocessors are not present. Among them, for example, the floating point unit. And this means that the sync function must be calculated through an algorithm that could be slow, complicated, and not accurate. This is the reason why often it is preferred the oversampling of the signal, that is, instead of sampling the signal with the Nyquist frequency, 2 times the original frequency of the signal, the sampling is performed at 5 or even 10 times the original frequency, so as to have enough samples to be interpolated with a classic function, and therefore allowing the reproduction of the original signal without the calculation of such a problematic function. In any case, most of these considerations are reported in the slide 26 of the conditioning network block. Concerning the third question, I only showed in the solution the diagram that relates the voltage of the emitter point in the UJT transistor with the corresponding current. We have already described this phenomenon 2 times in previous exercises, so I refer you to that explanation for all the details that are needed to answer the question. And coming to the last question of the exam, that is, what is the sensibility of an absolute encoder? It is a good point just to highlight the difference between the sensibility and the resolution of a transducer. Sometimes they can be coincident, sometimes not. The sensibility is the minimum variation of the input variable that causes a response in the output of the transducer, but is typically related at the beginning of the scale of values that the input, the physical magnitude detected by the transducer, can assume. The resolution, instead, is the minimum variation that causes a modification in the output response of the transducer, extended, considered on the overall range of values of the transducer itself, of the input and output values. This said, in some transducers, the two concepts are basically the same thing, and the absolute encoder is one of them, because what happens at the beginning of the scale of the input values happens also at the end. Therefore, the sensibility and the resolution can be represented by the ratio of the full rotation angle, 360 degrees, divided by 2 power n, where n is the number of the bits of the incremental encoder, and 2 power n is the number of the windows that characterize every crown of the encoder itself. In other words, the most, the greater, let's say, the number of the windows, the greater will be the accuracy of the absolute encoder that we are using. And this is all for the explanation of the possible solution of this exam. And this is all also for the lesson of today. So I give you an appointment to the next week, and I wish you a nice weekend.